Hey, I'm the mother, and unfortunately, the daughter, the eldest one, is not going to be joining me this week or next. This has been a crazy week. I apologize for this coming up late. We really don't like keeping you guessing, even though we tweeted that last week as a joke. This week, Murphy's Law has descended upon the house of Casey. And it was my last week teaching my summer course. And it's also the fiscal year end at my other job. So it's been a really crazy week for me and for her. I've literally worked pretty much nonstop for the last several weeks. I've been working, going to work at my normal time and then working, until bedtime. So I'm tired, and I'm ready for the weekend. And so, anyway, real quick, I want to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is how terrible the audio was last week. I am so sorry. I do not know what happened. I am really watching my recording levels tonight. I was not aware that something was amiss until I listened to the podcast after we'd already, uploaded it and everything. I knew that we'd had issues with Casey's audio thanks to the devil dog Penny, who had pulled the microphone out in the middle of recording. I just didn't know that there were also issues on my end, so I really apologize, and I am really working very hard to fix that. The problem is I really talk quietly anyway, and so I can't get a super sensitive microphone because then it'll pick up every background noise wherever I'm recording. So I do need to talk a little bit louder no matter what I'm recording on, and so it's just really not natural for me. And I'm used to, when I did work in law enforcement, our microphones were just really powerful, so I didn't have to talk loud. I did always have to worry about background noise, however. I did often get told that the background noise was, covering me up. Anyway, so I am just now getting this case in, and it's barely under the wire, because since June is or was LGBTQIA month, also known as Pride Month, I wanted to highlight the violence that members of these communities are subjected to, unfortunately, on a daily basis. But before I do, I want to give a little bit of history about Pride Month. I'm a historian. Anyway, it's really brief. Pride Month is celebrated in June in honor of the Stonewall Riots, which began after a police raid on June 28, 1969, at the Stonewall Inn. At that time, gays could not be openly out and often found bars such as the Stonewall Inn where they could gather. The owners of establishments such as these were rarely gay themselves, but catered to marginalized communities such as drag queens, transgenders, homeless youth, male prostitutes, lesbians, effeminate men, and so on. So when police raided in June of that year, the gay community had had enough, and over the next several nights rioted several times, and a movement was born. So Pride marches are held annually on the last Saturday in June in commemoration of the Stonewall riots. So now I'm going to fast forward several years to the well-known murders of Matthew Shepard and Brandon Tina. I'm not really going to talk about their murders tonight other than to briefly highlight them, because their murders really brought the plight of transgenders and gay people to a national level. So Brandon was a transgender man who was born Tina Brandon, but began identifying as male at an early age. Brandon was brutally murdered on December 31st, 1993, after some acquaintances of his found out that he was not a male by birth. There was a movie made Boys Don't Cry, and Hilary Swank played Brandon and won an Oscar for her portrayal. There's quite a bit of controversy surrounding the case because it was mishandled by law enforcement. There were some terrible comments made by law enforcement, including allegedly one of the officers calling Brandon, Tina, an it. The refusal of Brandon's mother to accept his gender identity. And then there was also a lawsuit filed against the movie studio by one of Brandon Tina's acquaintances or somebody who was affiliated in some way. So if you're not familiar with the case, you should really look it up. Like I said, I only mention it here because Brandon's murder really brought to national light how brutal this was, the violence that transgenders were subjected to. So another murder that brought about a great deal of change was that of Matthew Shepard, and he was murdered on October 12, 1998. Matthew was a 22-year-old gay man, and he was murdered by two men who had lured him out by allegedly pretending to be gay. But their stories changed so much during interviews, at trial, and in appeals, it's really hard to tell what the real story was. But the facts are this. They lured him out with the promise of a ride home. They took him to a remote area, pistol whipped him, tied him to a fence, and tortured him. They left, leaving him tied to the fence, where he was found 18 hours later by a cyclist who thought Shepard was a scarecrow. Matthew was in a coma when he was found, and he never recovered. His injuries were too severe, and he died several days later. His death led to the Matthew Shepard Act, which is formally, and I know my Southern accent's a little hard to understand, it's formally known as the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crime Prevention Act. And the act expands existing hate crime legislation to include crimes motivated by victims' perceived or actual gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. This also extended the power of the federal government, to investigate hate crimes when local law enforcement agencies did not wish to investigate crimes as hate crimes. So Joshua Vallum was the first person sentenced under the Federal Hate Crimes Prevention Act for targeting a victim because of gender identity. And he was sentenced to 49 years. And that was in Alabama, and Alabama chose not to pursue hate crime. So one last thing before I get into my case, I want to break down the hate crime legislation. There are 17 states plus the DC area that have hate crime legislation that covers sexual orientation, and gender identity. Pardon the rustling paper. There are 13 states that have legislation that only covers sexual orientation. There are 16 states that have hate crime legislation that does not cover sexual orientation or gender identity. And then there are 4 states with no hate crime legislation. And these states are Arkansas, Wyoming, Indiana, and South Carolina. The irony is that Shepard was killed in Wyoming. And so there's some background. Most of you probably already knew that. I just thought it was really important and relevant given the month it is as I'm recording this and also the story I'm about to discuss. So Amanda Milan was an aspiring fashion designer who made her living as a high-class escort, although some articles described her as a high-class escort, some articles described her as a prostitute turning tricks. But she made her living as an escort, and she dreamed of having gender reorientation surgery. She was tall. She was a black transsexual who wore her hair long, wore bright red lip gloss, and always wore a smile. She also had large breast implants, and she was 25 when she was murdered and had been out as transsexual for 8 years. Amanda was born in Chicago as Damon Lee Dyer. She had lived for several years before her murder in an apartment at Central Park West in New York City. She had a Pomeranian dog, Ashley, and she loved to travel. She traveled to Paris, Milan, and London. She hung with a fairly fashionable crowd, described by one friend as models just one notch from superstardom. This friend said that friends in their crowd were modeling with Naomi Campbell and Cindy Crawford, and Amanda herself was often compared to a more curvaceous Beverly Johnson. Amanda's best friends were Kim, a Puerto Rican transsexual who worked at Show World, which is some type of adult entertainment. It's either a strip club or an adult bookstore. I googled it and I came back with both. Her other best friend was Simone, a black transsexual who worked for Screw magazine. Kim went to England and then Australia in 1998, and she died in Australia. Her mangled body was found at the bottom of a cliff, and she was identified only by the serial numbers in her breast implants. About 6 months after Kim's death, Simone went to San Francisco with a boyfriend to live with him. But less than a month after she left, Simone was also found dead as a result of being thrown out a fifth-floor window. Amanda became paranoid, claiming things happen in threes, and thought she'd be next. And it turns out, sadly, she was right. About 6 months after Simone's death, Amanda herself was dead. Amanda's friend, Petra, said that she and Amanda would often wonder late at night what life would be like if they just lived their lives as men and found quote-unquote respectable jobs. But Amanda was not interested in that life. And sadly, the life that she had chosen was far too short. On the morning of June 20th, 2000, just days before the Pride Parade, around 4 a.m., she kissed her friends goodbye and then crossed 8th Avenue, hoping to catch a cab home. Reports say she had turned a quick trick that night and met her friends at McDonald's for coffee before they all went their separate ways. In front of the bus terminal, a young black male had been standing there for about an hour. He said something to Amanda as she came by, but her friends could not hear what was said. They did hear the next thing he said, which was, "Get your effing drag queen ass away from me." And then allegedly he said, "I know what you have between your legs." All her friends agreed that Amanda was not the type of person to just allow someone to talk to her this way. A witness claimed that he heard her ask the man, later identified as Dwayne McCullough, if he wanted to fight. He said something about he should just shoot her ass, and she walked away. It would have ended there if Eugene Celestine, a 26-year-old security guard, had not decided to help McCullough out. And yes, I probably butchered his last name. As McCullough and Amanda went their separate ways, Celestine said, "Yo, I got a knife." McCullough demanded he give it to him, Celestine did, and McCullough ran after Amanda. Her friends watched in horror as he came after her, but she could not hear their cries of warning. As she reached the corner, he made his way to her and he thrust the knife into her throat. She fell to the ground in front of Dwayne Reed Drugstore and began to bleed to death from the fatal wound. Someone only identified in the news reports as a young Puerto Rican male from the Bronx removed his shirt and tried to staunch the flow of blood, then held her in his arms saying, "Baby, don't leave us." The police arrived at 4:20. Amanda was taken to St. Vincent's Hospital in Chelsea, but it was too late. She was pronounced dead at 4:50 a.m. on June 20th, 2000. So the aftermath. Her death was first reported as a man fatally stabbed. The victim was dressed in women's clothes. Her birth name was given as well. Although not nationally as recognized as Brandon Tina, Amanda Milan's murder became a rallying cry for the LGBT community. Reverend Presley Sutherland, who ran a support group called Gender People, surmised that her death was a watershed moment for trans visibility and trans activism. People in the trans community had not come together like that before, and they were galvanized. 3 weeks after her murder, 300 people gathered at the Metropolitan Community Church, a gay, lesbian, and transgender church in New York City, to attend her memorial service. Octavia St. Laurent, a prominent drag queen who was featured in the documentary Paris is Burning about New York drag queens, was a friend of Amanda's and gave a eulogy. She demanded of the audience that Amanda's death not go unnoticed. After the service, the mourners marched to the site of her death and left flowers and other small gifts. Many public meetings were held in the months after Milan's death to enact change to existing hate crime or bias crime legislation to include gender as a protected category. As Milan lay dying, it is said that the non-trans crowd around her clapped and cheered. And let that soak in for a minute. I'm not going to talk about the trial or sentencing or even talk any further about the murderer himself. I feel sometimes that I focus too much on the perpetrator or the crime rather than the victims. So tonight, in honor of Pride Month, I'm going to end my segment, although technically it's all my segment, by mentioning some of the 22 trans victims who have been murdered already in 2017. Misha Caldwell, 41, was shot January 4th in Canton, Mississippi. No arrests have been made. Jamie Lee Wounded Arrow, 28, a Native American woman who identified as transgender, was found dead in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. An arrest has been made. JoJo Stryker, 23, transgender woman, was found murdered in Toledo, Ohio on February 8th. Stryker's mother said she was funny and entertaining and her family loved her deeply. Tiara Richmond, aka Kiki Collier, 24, was shot in Chicago, February 21. She was found on the same street where two other transgender women were killed in 2012. China Doll Dupree, 31, transgender woman, shot and killed in New Orleans on February 25th. She was visiting family and friends during Mardi Gras. Just 2 days later, Sierra McKelvin, 26, transgender woman, was stabbed in New Orleans. Jacarius Holland, 18, transgender woman, was shot to death in Monroe, Louisiana. Alphonza Watson, 38, transgender woman, shot and killed in Baltimore, Maryland on March 22nd. Her mother said of her daughter that she was the sunshine of our family and a caring, loving, passionate person who loved cooking and gardening. Kenny McFadden, 27, transgender woman, was found in the San Antonio River in San Antonio on April 9th. A longtime friend told local news outlets that she was assertive, charismatic, and lovable. Kendra Marie Adams, 28, transgender woman, was found in a building that was under construction on June 13th. She had burns on her body. A suspect has been charged with her murder. Che Reed, 28, transgender woman, shot and killed in Miami on April 21st. A longtime friend of Reed's said that she was someone who was full of life and beloved by many. Kenneth Bostick, 59, transgender male, found with severe injuries in Manhattan on a sidewalk. He later died of these injuries. Little is known of him, but it is believed he was homeless at the time of his murder. Sherelle Faulkner, 46, transgender woman, died May 16th of injuries from an attack on November 30th, 2016 in Charlotte, North Carolina. No suspects arrested as of yet. The intersectionality of race and gender is extraordinarily evident in the violence against transgender women, as almost every one of the ones I listed was identified as a transgender woman of color. And the number of transgender victims of homicide might be greater because many times the newspaper reports them under their birth name, or the family themselves will report them under their birth name and not their gender identity name. So it makes reporting transgender crimes nationally difficult. So that was the story, and that's actually the second time I've told it tonight because I recorded this earlier and discovered that I really, really talk fast. And so I wanted to redo this to slow down my speech a little bit. I am going to give a little bit of crime news. I have a couple of kind of funny stories somewhat to follow up on such a heavy story. So I don't know if anybody saw it this week, but here in Arkansas, because it did make CNN, we got a brand new ginormous Ten Commandments monument on the grounds of the Arkansas State Capitol. I'm not against that at all. I do think, you know, it's a little odd to put it on the government grounds. But anyway, so we got this brand spanking new monument, and it had just been in place for a few days when this guy came, and while live streaming on Facebook, drove into the monument. And apparently he was screaming freedom as he did it. And I think it had only been in place like maybe 24 hours because it was just put in place on Tuesday afternoon. And he did this on Wednesday, so less than 24 hours. So the videos have been removed from Facebook. The stone monument was 6 foot tall, and it was broken into at least 3 sections. He was arrested immediately by Capitol Police and taken into custody. He's had bond set at $100,000. He has done this before in Oklahoma City in 2014. Where they had a similar monument on their Capitol grounds, and he ran over it. So the funniest part of the story is that our former governor, who made a couple of bids for president in the past, but the GOP didn't pick him up, Mike Huckabee, tweeted, "Some idiot in my home state broke all 10 commandments at the same time. He wasn't Moses, and it wasn't Mount Sinai," which I just thought was hilarious. My next little story is, police in South Carolina are looking for a man who tried to rob a convenience store, and when he wasn't successful, he apologized to the clerk. So on June 18th, in Little River, South Carolina, which is in Horry County, an unidentified male walked inside and demanded money while holding a knife. The night clerk said the man entered the store at about 1 a.m. and when he said give him the money, the clerk was just like, nope, not gonna do it. And so when the would-be robber realized he wasn't gonna get any money, he was like, oh, well, gosh, I'm sorry, and he walked out and left. They're looking for him. I just thought that was pretty interesting. A contrite would-be thief. That is the crime news for this week. I don't know if I did a good job, but those were kind of funny. And so this is where we always kind of talk about our favorite things. And my favorite thing this week has had me laughing literally all week. My youngest daughter sent me a text Sunday night, and she loves biscuits and gravy. And she wanted to know if I'd make biscuits and gravy for dinner. And that sounded really weird. Sorry, for dinner. But in the best autocorrect fail ever, her text actually said, "Will you make bitches and gravy for dinner?" And I have laughed all week. So I replied back, "How dare you want to eat dogs covered in gravy?" But someone that I said that to was like, "Well, who were you supposed to have for dinner?" Which was even better, obviously. That was just hilarious. And then I got to meet one of my online... When you do online classes, it's sometimes hard. You never get to meet your professor sometimes. So I got to meet one who remotes in from out of state. And so that was really cool. We had a nice gathering with our department, so that was neat. And another shout out to Noelle, who gave us such a great iTunes review. It literally brought tears to my eyes. Thank you so much. You're the coolest. I cannot wait to talk about Game of Thrones with you in just a few weeks. I'm so excited. And for anybody who is not aware, for the 7 weeks that GOT is on this summer, that will be my favorite thing every week. I will not give spoilers, but I'm just going to be like, my favorite thing is GOT. And I just got this breaking news, and all it says is, on the eve of deadline, Pentagon delays plan to allow new transgender recruits by 6 months. So I'll have to read that. And on that note, and on the to follow up on the reviews, if you like our show, or even just semi-tolerate it, if you could give us a review on iTunes, it would help us out so much. It helps other listeners find us, and it helps us by putting us on the charts. And in the end, you know, that helps everybody. We're all happy. A happy mom, you know, I am the mother, and everybody knows if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy. Ha ha. Anyway, and I'm not going to give Casey's tagline except because I really can't remember it. I'm terrible at taglines. I remember mine. Mine is, bye.